Welcome to Design 30. My name is Jason Bilyeu, and in this podcast, I provide design strategies and tools to improve creativity, innovation, and overall design confidence. Welcome to Design 30, everybody. Welcome to another episode. Going through what I think is a really useful design idea and something that actually applies to even more than just design, be business probably in general, maybe even to making good decisions in your life. But in the context of this podcast, it'll be very pertinent to making good decisions in a design context. And that is going to be directly from this book. Let's see if I can show that. Design for Manufacturability and Concurrent Engineering. This is by Dr. David M. Anderson. And I just started, I've kind of been working my way slowly through this book for the last couple months. And it's been really, really fascinating. There's just so much good information and something. It's something that you can tell this person has a lot of experience, and a lot of the things that they're experiencing or have experienced and are writing about are things that I've been experiencing in my own work as an engineer, and I'm sure it's something that a lot of other people have probably experienced as well. And it's really comforting to know that the difficulties, the problems that you run into at work, these are things that a lot of other companies I've also ran into. There's solutions to a lot of these things. That doesn't mean that your company is necessarily abnormally bad at accomplishing some of these things, or bad at organizing their design teams or product development. All these things, like, these are just genuinely really difficult problems to solve. And there's a reason why there's so many books out there about these different design ideas, design concepts, ways to organize your engineering teams, your R&D teams, ways to interact between a design team and an engineering team. Yeah, these things they're complicated. So I'm just going to go through actually just a very short section of this book that I think is particularly interesting and useful. Before we dive into that, as always, make sure you subscribe to the Design 30 podcast. If you're watching the video version of this, make sure you subscribe to Design 30 on YouTube. That's something I've been working on over the last 6 months, trying to grow a little bit of my footprint on the YouTube world. Now we've gone to these video podcasts, which I think are pretty fun. And then also, I post a lot of shorts on there, a lot of just design thoughts, ideas, often post about the different design principles of Design 30 that I'm thinking about and working on and workshopping most of the time. So make sure to subscribe, like, share, all of those things. And of course, also on X and on Instagram if you prefer those platforms. So let's actually dive into this section, this very small section of this book that I want to start with just reading a quick passage, and then we'll go from there kind of discussing this design idea. So it says, the title of this is Realities About Design Constraints. Designers may resist designing products for manufacturability if they think it limits their quote-unquote design freedom. But in reality, too few constraints will lead to the design equivalent of writer's block. If every design decision has many open choices, the whole design will represent an overwhelming array of choices that can lead to a design paralysis. So the designer breaks the impasse by making an arbitrary decision. Every arbitrary decision will make it progressively more and more difficult to incorporate other design considerations later. And the further the design process or the design progresses, and the more arbitrary decisions you make, the harder it will be to satisfy additional considerations. The decision-making motto for product development should be no arbitrary decisions. So the two key takeaways for me on this section are one, that design constraints don't actually, they can be seen as ways to limit your design freedom, but really at the end of the day, they may actually increase the freedom you have, or at least the ability you have to make decisions. And if you don't have these constraints, then you're more likely to just make an arbitrary decision, right? We're all going to be up against pretty aggressive timelines. No matter where you work, you almost always have aggressive timelines, right? So if you have this really broad problem statement, or just not very many constraints on what you can design, at some point you're just going to be forced to make a decision. And that decision is probably going to be arbitrary because there's just too many potential options. There's too many paths you could go down. There's too many design decisions that could potentially be made. So you just make one, right? Just to keep things moving forward. And so that's what the key point of this whole section is about. You need to have more design constraints if you find yourself making arbitrary decisions. So let's go through this a little bit more line by line. So the first sentence, designers may resist designing products for manufacturability if they think it limits their design freedom. And so this book, a big part of it is optimizing the manufacturability of a design, and they're really pushing for doing that work up front and making sure that it's manufacturable up front from the very beginning you're designing for this. If you try to shoehorn it in later in the design process, odds are it's going to be really clunky. It's not going to go that well. You're going to have a bunch of problems. You're going to go over budget. You're going to be way over on your project timeline, all those things. So you need to be thinking about the manufacturability of your product from the very outset, essentially. And that's a huge part of the design. If something's not very manufacturable, you're going to have more problems when the customer gets it. And so they're going to be dissatisfied. It's going to cost a lot of money to address those problems on the production floor. So it's not going to be a very profitable product as well. So it's all about designing a better product for the customer, which at the end of the day also produces a more profitable product and a more profitable company. So they make this point that some people hear, if they have to design for manufacturability early on, that might actually limit how much freedom they have in their design. But as they say, in reality, too few constraints, and making something manufacturable is definitely going to add a lot of constraints to your design, will lead to the design equivalent of writer's block. So let me read that one more time. In reality, too few constraints will lead to the design equivalent of writer's block. So it's kind of like if I told you just to write a 1,000-word essay on anything in the world. That might be pretty difficult to come up with a topic, and then what do you want to say about that topic? What's your opinions on that? It's just such a broad thing. It sounds easier at first because you can write about anything. But when you're sitting there trying to figure out what's the right thing to write about, it could actually be really difficult. But if I told you something very specific that you need to write, let's say, a 1,000-word essay on why you think modular nuclear reactors will be beneficial to small cities in isolated parts of the country. That's very specific. It might be difficult initially to figure out what you want to say about that, but you have a path to go down. You can do some research on it. You can come up with a few ideas, a few opinions, and then you can write probably a much better essay than if I just said, write 1,000 words on anything in the world, right? So having those additional constraints actually can make it a lot easier, and you're going to have a lot less likelihood of having that writer's block. And so it's the same thing with product design. If you, for example, let's say you're told you have to design a vehicle for transporting groceries, or a vehicle that someone can drive and they want to use it to transport groceries. Well, that's incredibly broad, right? You could use a semi-truck to still hit those requirements. You could transport groceries from the store to your house in a semi-truck. I wouldn't recommend it. Seems like that would be a huge pain, but it would technically satisfy the requirements. Or you could also use a tiny little smart car, right? I mean, how many groceries are you going to be buying? It doesn't specify. There's no constraint on that. So a solution could also be a smart car. So you can see how there's just such a broad spectrum of solutions here that it's going to be really hard to make a decision, because how are you going to know which one is correct? How do you know which one is going to be the best possible solution, or at least a good solution? So let's go on to the next sentence. If every design decision has many open choices, the whole design will represent an overwhelming array of choices that can lead to design paralysis. So the designer breaks the impasse by making an arbitrary decision. So again, going back to this problem statement of a vehicle that can transport groceries, it's so broad that it's going to be really hard to make a decision, right? So this is where you hit that design paralysis, and inevitably you're going to get pressure on your timeline of that we have to get moving forward, we have to get moving towards the next phase, we need to get moving into the design phase. So you're just going to make a decision, right? So you might say, okay, we need a vehicle to transport groceries. Electric vehicles seem to be in, so let's make it electric. You want to throw groceries, maybe you want to just throw them in the bed of your truck, so let's make this an electric truck. We don't really know how big or how many groceries we want to transport, or what they're, you know, is it just a single person? Is it for a large family? Don't really know. So let's make it this really big truck, and let's make it potentially really heavy as well, so that it can, just based on the size, it can carry a ton of groceries. Yeah, that's not very maybe realistic, but you're under pressure. You just have to make a decision. So now all of a sudden you're designing this vehicle that is massive. It's electric, has electric motors. It's an electric vehicle. It's also a truck, so it's got a large bed on it. And is that actually something that is going to serve this customer well? You don't even really know who the customer is, right? Those are constraints. When you have a voice of the customer, you have a market segment that you're going for, you know the geography of where this thing is going to be used. Those are all constraints that are going to help you make a better decision about how to design this product. And if you don't have them, you don't have those constraints, you might make really poor decisions. And then once you start testing it, like they're saying, like you start going down this path of just making arbitrary decisions, almost 100% of the time, you're going to be getting farther and farther away from a good solution. And as you learn that you're getting farther and farther away, you're going to have to try to readjust and get back to that optimal or at least a good solution. And it's going to be even harder. It's going to take more time. It's going to cost more money. And it's going to be really difficult and stressful for the project, because when you're running out of money and you're running out of time, that is a perfect recipe for being stressed at work, especially in a design and engineering role. So let's keep going. Every arbitrary decision will make it progressively more difficult to incorporate other design considerations later. So as I mentioned, like as you're going towards this suboptimal design, it's going to be harder and harder to go back towards that optimal design, because you've already made so many decisions, and changing those is going to feel like you're going backwards. And again, it's going to take more time and more money. And the further the design progresses and the more arbitrary decisions you make, the harder it will be to satisfy additional considerations. The decision-making motto for product development should be no arbitrary decisions. And if you want to make no arbitrary decisions, then you have to have at least a decent amount, some amount of constraints. And if you're developing good constraints, those constraints are going to help direct you more towards this optimal, or at least a close to optimal product, a close to optimal design. So these constraints, how they can seem to be holding you back in a lot of ways, and they're limiting your design freedom, they're constraining you, right? It might seem like a bad thing at first. It might seem like a difficult thing. Like, well, it's gonna be even harder to make decisions. It's gonna be harder to find some solution that can meet all these constraints. At the end of the day, it's actually going to let you make decisions that are based on something and not arbitrary. So, for example, if we said you needed to design a vehicle that is going to be used in a, used in a location where there isn't the infrastructure yet for electric vehicles. And these are people who are going to be driving through potentially, let's say, bad weather, snowy weather. It's kind of a rough climate. It's a place that doesn't have a lot of infrastructure. And these people need to be able to transport a lot of groceries because they live, let's say a long ways away from the grocery store, I should say 60 plus miles from the nearest grocery store. So if you're designing a vehicle for that, you're going to be making much different decisions. You're not going to go electric because you don't have the infrastructure to support it. And people aren't going to want to buy that coming in that market segment, right? You're going to need a vehicle that does well in all sorts of different weather conditions. And you need to be able to hold a lot of groceries because they don't want to go to the grocery store every day or probably not even every week. They live so far away. So this could be a truck or a large SUV. It's most likely going to be a gas or internal combustion engine of some sort, gas or diesel. So that right there just makes it so much easier to start making decisions and to start making good decisions, decisions that you're not going to have to go back and change later on in the design process. So as you may have already thought about, a huge part of this is determining good constraints. Because if you have bad constraints, then you're obviously going to be making bad decisions. So your decisions can only be as good as the constraints that are constraining that decision-making space, right? Your solution space. So it's really important to have really well thought out, well researched, and well understood constraints, which means you need to understand your customer. You need to understand the market as a whole. You need to understand what your company is good at. You need to understand what your stakeholders are asking for and what they expect from you as a design team, as a product development team. And if you have a good grasp on those things and put in that front end work to figure those things out, you're going to develop good constraints, which will then lead to a situation where you're not going to be making arbitrary design decisions. And at the end of the day, is going to allow for a lot more efficient and a lot more productive product development process. And you're going to have a lot higher likelihood of being on time and being under budget on that project. That's what we all want at the end of the day, right? That's how we're going to impress our bosses. That's how we are going to have less stress in our jobs, less stress at work, and really get a focus on the fun design part and less on the project management, getting all bent out of shape about being over budget and being behind and having to make up time and getting caught up in cost reduction efforts for months or years on end, right? Those are things that if you're like me as a designer, as an engineer, that's not exactly where you find the most excitement. It's not why you became an engineer. You want to create and design new products that serve customers and that are cool, new, fun, innovative technology, right? So that's about all I have for this episode. Again, this book is called, let's see if I can show it on the screen here, Design for Manufacturability and Concurrent Engineering. That is by Dr. David M. Anderson. I will almost certainly be doing many more episodes on this. It's a really, really good book, really interesting. Highly recommend that you go out and buy it. So I'm going to leave it there. If you have any questions or comments, please, as always, reach out, whether that is over email or over social media. Would love to hear feedback. Make sure to rate and review the podcast if you can. If you're on Spotify, please give a rating. I'm trying to get that rating up and my numbers up on that. So that would be very helpful and a great way to support the podcast. As always, remember, design more, despair less. Thanks for watching.